ready yesterday. Good morning. It's 10 a.m. Monday, December 31st, 2007. The commission is holding a regularly scheduled meeting. Today in the commission hearing room, State Capitol 12th floor in Bismarck, North Dakota. I'm Commissioner Susan Wiefald, and with me today are Commissioners Tony Clark and Commissioner Kevin Kramer. I'm going to start out by making a few New Year's resolutions this morning. First of all, I'm planning to, as a personal one, I'm planning to spend time with my new granddaughter, Grace Elizabeth, who was born in New York City on December 17th. And I had a wonderful first 9 days of her life with her, and I'm looking forward to continuing that relationship. And then as far as a professional resolution, I'm planning to continue to work on enforceable planning reserves for the upper Midwest. This is to ensure that we have sufficient electricity generation and demand-side response to meet the needs of electricity customers 10 years from now. This is a hot topic. Although we don't talk about it a lot here at our commission, it is a hot topic. We have been in discussions together about it across the whole 15-state region of the MISO region, and so we're just working hard to ensure those 10 years from now we have sufficient generation for meeting the needs of electricity customers. Do my fellow commissioners have any New Year's resolutions they would like to share or predictions?
I'm not into predictions. I'll make a couple of resolutions. First, it's always, I think, good to reflect on last year's. And I did resolve a year ago that I would have a consistent supply of and variety of quality candies in my office and my to entice visitors to my office and staff participation. And I did that. I pretty consistently had dark chocolate for Alana, Snickers for Tony, which eventually he converted more to Twix. The hot candies for Mike, and everybody kind of had their favorite in there. So I've been able to do that, and I'll continue to do that because that's been a fun thing to have quality candy, which otherwise quality. People just they tend not, yeah. I used to a year ago I used to put the really cheap stuff in, and it was always full. But anyway, now I have money, more visitors. I did transition then into also getting a little bit spoiled myself and spoiling staff, I think, a little bit with better coffee in PUD. Yes, so I'll continue that tradition as well. Make sure there's always an adequate supply of Starbucks grounds or Caribou or something better than Folgers. So we'll do that for another year as well. Also last year, I guess I resolved to enhance my spiritual witness, and thanks to the encouragement of staff and friends, I was able to read the entire scriptures, finished up the last book just yesterday. So that was rewarding for me. So I think what I'll do this year is resolve to further strengthen my Christian witness by spending me even more and more intense time in the Bible this year, spend more time in conversation with God, and strengthen a bolder proclamation of faith for 2008. So I look forward to another good year.
Commissioner Clark.
And I have just two. I would have had three, but I got a call from a reporter about 9:30, and that took up the rest of the time before I got here. So I only have two. Number one is I have to make this is going to be an immediate one. I need to make a dinner reservation for tonight.
Oh, yeah.
As my wife reminded me as I left out the door this morning. So resolution number one is to get a restaurant reservation for tonight. If anyone has any ideas what might still be open, please let me know. Number two.
McDonald's.
Yeah. They're open late, I hear.
Soda beers.
My other resolution is to do something which I have never had a bad time doing, I don't think, more this year, which is to fish more. I absolutely love fishing, and I especially love fishing with the kids and with family, and my oldest two boys are now getting to the age where they can participate and probably enjoy it a little bit more than when they were younger. So, this year I resolved to get out first on the ice a little more and then out on the open water after that and devote some time to something that I haven't had a lot of time to do the last few years.
And you notice he's not saying catch more fish. He's just saying fishing.
No, fish more.
Fish more.
I think the only time I've ever regretted fishing was maybe for a few minutes when I was out on Devil's Lake and a tornado warning hit for Ramsey County. But even that wasn't that bad. The fish bit after we got back out on the water.
Thank you very much. I think we're ready now. I'll make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
A lot of interesting stuff in the consent agenda.
Mm-hmm. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
And next we'll go to SW1. This is these are the fuel cost adjustments for the month of December, first for MDU. As a result of the change for the MDU customers for electricity, an electric bill for a typical MDU residential customer consuming 750 kilowatt hours per month will decrease by 67 cents for bills rendered in the month of December. And the cost of fuel for MDU's customers will be 2.34 cents per kilowatt hour for the month of December. For NSP, as a result of this change, the electric bill for a typical NSP residential customer consuming 750 kilowatt hours will decrease by 34 cents for bills rendered in the month of December. The cost of fuel for NSP's electric customers will be 2.77 cents per kilowatt hour. And Otter Tail, as a result of this change, the electric bill for a typical Otter Tail residential customer consuming 750 kilowatt hours per month will increase by 75 cents for bills rendered in the month of December. Although Otter Tail's fuel cost will increase by 75 cents, they have the lowest cost of fuel this month at 2 cents per kilowatt hour, and that is because we're still passing through the cost, the administrative costs that the commission ordered them to do that relate to MISO sections 16 and 17 of their tariff. And so that it went into place for a four-month period of time, and so that is going to continue through the month of December now. All right, going on to SW2. SW2 was withdrawn, and it now has become SW8. Now we're down to SW3. I move the commission suspend Northern State Power Company's rates filed with its electric rate increase application in case number PU07776. This is the major rate case that NSP has filed with the commission for an electric rate increase. And this is just a procedural matter today. If the commission does not suspend these rates, they go into effect very soon. And so the commission is suspending it, and therefore then we have the normal amount of time to adequately take a look at this case.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
SW4. I move the commission close out contract numbers AM54607 and AM54707 with Hanson's Excavating Inc. for completion of sinkhole filling work at several abandoned mine land sites in western North Dakota.
Second.
This is basically procedural. The commission has completed work. The contracts were awarded in the amount of $21,187,000 for hazardous sinkholes in Divide County near Noonan, and the site of Williams County is near Hanks. Also, we completed another contract, also was awarded for $10,800 for filling hazardous sinkholes south of Sawyer and Ward County. Work under both these contracts was completed to the satisfaction of the project managers, and we're closing out those contracts.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
On this is SW5. I move the commission extend contract number AM54507 with TNC Drilling, Inc. until May 15, 2008 for exploratory drilling at abandoned underground mine sites.
Second.
The work was not able to be finished before cold weather set in. This particular project is near Beulah. And so on December 7th, TNC Drilling sent a letter requesting that the contract be extended until May 15th of 2008. It certainly seems reasonable, and so the commission is agreeing with this motion to do that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. SW6, I have a visual aid for this one. I move the commission submit the 2008-2011 North Dakota Abandoned Mine Lands Reclamation Simplified grant application to the Office of Surface Mining requesting $3,072,803 in federal funds for the Abandoned Mines Lands Program.
Second.
This is a great day for the commission. This is a great day because usually we have only been able to file an application for about $1.5 million in federal funds for the Abandoned Mine Land Program. This is the first year that the commission has been able to request over $3 million for this Abandoned Mine Land Program in any time since the Abandoned Mine Land Program has started. And because of that, we're going to be able to do two major projects in this next year, and we're going to be able to complete more work than we would have in the past. For example, the Columbus. We're in phase 9 of the Columbus project. This project will involve the elimination of 4,000 feet of hazardous high walls from an abandoned surface mine located southwest of Columbus in Burke County. The dangerous high walls are located near public roads and farm fields, and this project will include mulching and seeding of the disturbed areas. To give you an idea, if we had not been able to ask for and receive this amount of money this year, this particular part of this project, this 4,000 feet, which is over here, probably would have taken 3 or 4 years to complete with the monies that we've received in the past. This is the area that is 7 miles from the Canadian border. It's in the northwestern part of the state near Crosby. To give you an idea of how much has been completed of this project in the 9 phases, this whole area in the middle the high wall has been eliminated, and this whole area, the high wall has been eliminated. These high walls are 70 to 80 feet tall, and so it is a considerable danger to people who are hunting in the area, to people who are the farm animals, but in general to the public who have access to this area. And so it will be great this year to be able to complete this side of highway. It's actually west of highway number 40. Well, by the end of this next year, we should have completed removing the high wall of this 4,000 feet. And then we still have areas that need reclamation, however, over on the east side of highway 40. But you can see this is quite a large area that was mined, and we are slowly making progress, and this year we'll be able to make more progress. We also will be doing Williams County Road 9, Phase 3. This proposed reclamation entails pressurized grouting into collapsed underground mine workings located beneath the stretch of County Road 9 and other public roads near Williston in Williams County. And this is a continuation of work that's previously occurred in this area. This will be Phase 3. And additional phases may be needed in the future to complete this project. We are anticipating that approximately $2,171,763 will be spent for major construction projects during this grant period. That compares to around $1 million that's been spent in the past. And it'll also enable the commission to have monies for emergency projects that come up through the year, as you've heard us talk about sinkholes that have been discovered that need to be filled. So, all in all, this is a great day for the North Dakota Public Service Commission. It'll even be a better day when we receive those federal funds and can start in on those projects. But we anticipate no problems in receiving those dollars this year.
It's a great day for consumers, too. Yeah. We often forget that, although the money that funds this is, I guess, supposedly levied on coal companies, it's electric ratepayers that really pay this. And every year, the coal industry, and then is passed on to consumers in North Dakota, pays in about $3 million to this fund. And year after year after year, we'd only gotten back $1.5 million. In fact, to tell you a little bit about how federal government budgeting works, they said we were supposed to get $2 million of the $3 million that we paid in, but then would only appropriate $1.5 million. And this is the first year now that we're getting back the entire amount, basically, that North Dakota's paid in. And in subsequent years, I can't recall exactly when this kicks in, but within a few years, it's actually going to go up to about $4 million. Then eventually, it'll start being ratcheted back down. And eventually, the Abandoned Mine Land Fund nationwide will wind down at some point after abandoned mines have been cleaned up. So it really is. It's a good thing for consumers. It's a good thing for the public safety of the people of North Dakota. And we're going to be able to get a lot more projects done this year because of the change.
All in favor?
Aye.
SW7, I move the commission authorize holding a public meeting in Williston to discuss the 2008 AML reclamation project planned in Williams County and to solicit input on other abandoned mine land sites of concern. Next year, the AML division is planning for the third phase of the Williams County Road 9 project east of Williston, and this project involves drilling to locate mine voids and injecting grout into underground mine workings. Based on our work along the public roads, it is apparent the Grandview subdivision is also undermined. Also, we recently received a call with concerns about mine sinkholes west of Williston. We believe it would be appropriate to hold another public meeting in Williston to inform the public about expanding the scope of the ongoing project and to take public comment on any other abandoned mine sites of interest to the area. The most recent public meeting was held in Williston in December of 2005. And so it is appropriate for the commission to hold another meeting. At this time, we can't tell you the exact date of that meeting. We plan to hold the meeting by early February, and we will put out newspaper advertising and letters to county officials and landowners to inform interested parties and the public of that meeting when it is scheduled.
All in favor?
Aye.
SW8, I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in case number PU07774. On December 5th, Northern States Power Company filed a petition for accounting treatment of its nuclear refueling costs. The recommended accounting treatment will amortize the cost of refueling over the life of the fuel rather than the current method of expensing costs when they are incurred. Amortizing the costs will level the costs and provide a better matching of costs to the consumers using the fuel. And on December 20th of this year, the commission staff concluded that the commission should approve this new method of accounting for nuclear refueling costs. Now we're inviting anyone who's interested to comment on this application in writing. And any person desiring a hearing on this must file a written request by December 21st of 2008. And if deemed appropriate, the commission can determine these matters without a hearing. This is rather a technical matter, and we don't anticipate a lot of public comment, but it's only right to give people a chance to comment in case there is someone interested in this accounting issue to have that opportunity.
All in favor?
Aye.
That concludes the items in my portfolio. Commissioner Kramer.
Thanks. Casey, one is a couple of announcements of cost of gas adjustments. MDU is increasing its cost of gas charge by $1.718 per decatherm compared to last month, which will change the cost of gas charge from $4.61 per decatherm to $6.33 per decatherm. And that will raise the cost of gas in the bill by about $29.21 higher than last month and $4.90 lower than January of last year. MDU is also increasing its propane cost of gas charge by 55 cents per decatherm compared to last month, changing the cost of gas charge from 1609.9 to 1664.9 per decatherm for its Hettinger customers in January. For a typical residential customer using 17 decatherms, the cost of propane in the bill will be about $9.35 higher than last month and $85.27 higher than January of last year. These are just, well, the first one is fairly typical of this time of year. It's quite typical of this time of year, obviously. It's a supply-demand issue. It's colder weather. The propane situation is one where it reflects how closely propane, cost of propane follows the price of oil as opposed to just its own commodity, natural gas being more of its own commodity. KC2. Now, KC2 and 3 are somewhat related. They're both Enbridge pipeline cases in the same quarter. KC2 is case PU0775. I move the commission adopt the order and issue a corridor certificate and route permit in Enbridge Pipeline's Southern Lights LLC's application for the construction of approximately 28 miles of 20-inch crude oil pipeline and associated facilities, all in Pembina County of North Dakota, case number PU0775.
Second.
I did leave on the table a map of this and the next pipeline that we'll be talking about or voting on, as well as a fact sheet on both of them. I'll make sure I'm talking about the right one all the time. This PU0775 is a 313-mile, 20-inch liquid petroleum pipeline extending from Cromer, Manitoba to Clearbrook, Minnesota. 28 miles of it is, of course, in North Dakota, paralleling an existing Enbridge pipeline. It's, I think, worthy to note that the existing corridor, which was previously sited, has five pipes in the ground right now. So this one will be sixth, and the next one that we're talking about will be seven. So there'll be a total of seven pipelines in this particular corridor. This pipeline is designed to transport about 108. Well, it's actually designed for up to 207,000 barrels per day. It's intended to carry 186,000 barrels per day of crude oil from Western Canada, North Dakota, and Montana into the U.S. markets. The entire cost is $31.5 million of the North Dakota portion. Construction is scheduled to begin next year and in operation by the end of the year. We did have a public hearing, a joint public hearing on this application in Cavalier on October 7th, 2007. A fair number of interested parties attended the hearing. This particular pipeline does cross three rivers in our state, one particular crossing of little note because it's a rather bare portion of the Red River. It crosses the Red, of course, into Minnesota. It crosses the Pembina River. There the company intends to horizontally directional drill. In other words, bore underneath all of the forests and the river there to avoid clearing any trees. There's another river crossing that became the topic of a fair amount of discussion, and that is the Tongue River. The current corridor does cut through a swath or a right-of-way of trees and then crosses the Tongue River. But as a result of a curve in the river, a change in direction of the river, there was not adequate room on the side of the existing corridor to follow the normal 25 feet or 50 feet from the existing pipes and still remain on the bank of the river. So the company proposed to move that crossing some couple hundred yards away, in which case it would cross at a very thick forested area. We expressed concern about creating another corridor, another swath, if you will, of tree clearing. And so we're proposing, and in this order actually proposes a couple of options, depending on what happens now after this with regard to cultural resources. But one would be our preferred, and I think the company's preferred method would be to cross to the other side of the existing corridor, just widen that existing clearing across the Tongue River, and thereby not creating a new clearing. If that proves to be not real compatible with cultural resources, for example, then the company would horizontally, directionally drill underneath the forest in the Tongue River in its original proposed route. So everything was in order. It was a very good meeting, a good hearing. The only opposition was from the only issue of concern raised was raised by a local water district relating to the crossing of a number of the pipelines in that area. The company and the water district talked it over, worked some things out, and came to some resolution on how to do all of that properly with minimal adverse effect to everybody. So everything seems to be in order.
This is a major pipeline for the state of North Dakota. A 20-inch pipeline, and then, of course, the other one that we're going to be approving in the same corridor next is 36-inch pipeline. This is significant oil capacity moving from Canada into the United States. I didn't realize until we went through this hearing process, and as Commissioner Cramer has already said, we spent significant time on the crossings of these rivers in North Dakota. We realized, as part of this, that the Pembina River has been designated on the National Rivers Inventory. To give you an idea of the importance of this, there's only two other rivers in the state of North Dakota that are on the National Rivers Inventory, the Missouri River, sections of that, and also the Little Missouri River, sections of that. Thus, because its designation, the state and federal agencies need to avoid or mitigate actions that would adversely affect designated NRI river segments. And so that is the reason that the company has said that they will use horizontal drilling, directional drilling method to cross underneath the Pembina River, and on the north side of the Pembina River, the directional drill would start far enough from the river to drill under all of the trees. So that is was very interesting to learn about that National Rivers inventory. As Commissioner Kramer also indicated and talked about, we did spend a lot of time on the Tongue River crossing, and I think we have addressed that in a proper manner. And we'll be interested in knowing whether once they have completed an archaeological survey for that Tongue River crossing, of which river crossing proposal they are going to be following. So they'll be in touch with the commission and be back in touch with us about that. And as he said, we did have the concern expressed by the water district folks, and the they were with the North Valley Water District, and they testified with respect to its rural water lines, which will cross under the proposed pipeline at approximately 9 locations. So Enbridge SL has committed it will work with the water district to minimize disruption of its rural water lines, and Enbridge SL and the North Valley Water District have reached an agreement regarding mitigation measures needed at the 9 crossings and have filed a copy of that agreement with the commission. So that seems to be addressed at this time. All of these pipelines take a considerable amount of time, not only from the pipeline people, but our staff spent a considerable amount of time working through the issues. Even on a 28-mile pipeline, this one has not received as much attention from the public at large. But I want to assure you that in spite of that, our staff and the commission has spent a significant amount of time working through the issues on this 28-mile segment, because whenever you're adding 2 new pipelines to the state, we are looking at safety factors as well as all of the environmental and cultural factors that need to be addressed by the state in regard to our laws.
All in favor?
Aye.
KC3. I move the commission adopt the order and issue a corridor certificate and route permit in Enbridge Energy Limited Partnership's application for the construction of approximately 28 miles of 36-inch crude oil pipeline and associated facilities, all in Pembina County of North Dakota, case number PU07108.
Second.
This is the other Enbridge pipeline. This is a quite a different one, as a matter of fact. It's 1,000 miles in total, the same 28 miles in North Dakota. It is a 36-inch pipe as opposed to 20-inch. It was at one point contemplated by Enbridge that it would be 42 inches. So just to give you a sense of the volume of oil that is expected to come out of Western, really big Western Canada. In fact, somebody that's really interested in doing a lot on this, I think would be fascinated by the applications themselves, because they go into a great bit of detail on both the supply projections and the demand projections for the North American continent. And so at any rate, it's this 36 inches. It will have, it is intended to take about 450,000 barrels per day from Western Canada, from the tar sands, the oil sands of Western Canada, Alberta. We've become quite familiar with that. And into the Midwest markets. This particular design capacity, being 36 inches, it also has ultimate capacity of somewhere near 900,000 barrels per day. So although it's initially intended to carry 450,000, it does have a great deal more capacity built into its design. The cost estimate for the North Dakota portion is $63.5 million. Construction is expected to begin late next year, early the year after, and be completed shortly after that or sometime after that. It's obviously, as I said, a much longer project. Again, this was part of the joint hearing that we had at the Cavalier Law Enforcement Center in Pembina County. All of the same factors were considered from a routing standpoint, and everything seems to be in order.
These two pipelines will be about 25 feet apart from each other, and they join 5 other pipelines that are in this corridor that already exist there. So this is a significant pipeline corridor through the state of North Dakota, and everything seems to be in order for this motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And that's everything in my portfolio.
Next, we'll go to Commissioner Clark.
I have just one item in my portfolio, TC1. I move the commission adopt the order approving the application of Sagebrush Cellular, Inc. for designation as an eligible telecommunications carrier for receiving federal universal service support, case number PU07672.
Second.
We haven't had an ETC application in a while, so I can't remember the last time we had. It's been a few years, I think.
Yeah, it has been a while.
In this case, Sagebrush Cellular is a subdivision of Nemont Telephone Company. Nemont operates in North Dakota in a couple of exchanges. Probably most prominently is they are the owner of Missouri Valley Communications, which is the local incumbent telephone company for the Williston Exchange in that area. Their Sagebrush Cellular subdivision is intending to provide service throughout northwest North Dakota, primarily Divide and Williams counties, and they have applied for ETC designation. ETC simply makes them, it's granted by state commissions, but it makes them eligible to receive federal universal service subsidies to help them build out their network. They came in for an informal hearing a few weeks ago and were very well prepared. It was the first application that we've had since the commission promulgated rules regarding eligible telecommunications carriers, and so they it was really a matter of going down a checklist of items that we had laid out in rules and proving that they had the ability to serve. The items that we have to consider in an ETC application are, number one, the qualification of the applicant under the Telecom Act of 1996 for designation as an ETC. They met that standard. And number two, that the ETC service support, or we have to define the ETC universal service support area to be designated for the applicant. That was took a little bit of work in this case because traditionally an eligible telecommunications carrier receives the support for the ILEC service territory. Because it's a cellular company, their service area in North Dakota that they have spectrum for is just Divide in Williams County. So we had to divide up the service territory a little bit in this order, and then that'll go to the FCC for final approval. And number three, we had to establish that it was in the public interest for Sagebrush to receive universal service support, and in this case, we, in the order, we're indicating that they do meet the public interest standard. So once this is adopted, they'll have the ability, to the degree that they get customers, for every customer they sign up, they'll get some level of federal subsidy to help build out the network, and we hope that this helps to provide even more robust wireless coverage in the northwest part of the state.
This was the first time, as Commissioner Clark said, that we used our new rules on for approving an eligible telecommunications carrier, and they were very helpful. They gave us a good framework to ask questions in regard to their plans and their responsibilities in regard to being an eligible telecommunications carrier, because it's important for the commission to take a close look at this, because this involves that that this company will be able to receive these federal funds. And these federal funds can be significant. Some carriers in the state in North Dakota receive approximately $5 to $10 million a year in these federal funds in order to be able to provide services to rural North Dakotans. And so we take our job seriously as approving an eligible telecommunications carrier, and this company seems to fill the bill.
I would just—I'd compliment Nemont as well for just being very prepared for the.
They were
for the
very
hearing. They've been a very good company to work with over the years. I've found, and that goes not just for this application, but for when the Williston Exchange was being converted and rolled into their company. They also provided very significant detail on where they plan to be building out over the next year or so, and it's a very aggressive build-out schedule, so it should hopefully, within a fairly short amount of time, improve coverage in that area for customers of Sagebrush. I don't know what their roaming agreements will look like, so whether it'll help out customers for companies who are with other companies in that area, I'm not sure to the degree that may or may not help, but certainly for those customers, it does appear that a number of towers will be going up in a short period of time in a fairly compact geographic area.
And that's always helpful to the commission, because it means we may not get a call from communities up there asking us to hold a Zap-to-Zap meeting Or if we do hold a zap the gap, we have the promise of better things, better service to come in that area.
Not that I wouldn't love to go to Granora.
I'd rather go up there and fish.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. And be able to get cell phone coverage in the boat.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. The commission will not be holding an informal hearing this afternoon at 1:30, but we do have a number of other meetings that have been scheduled already that are included in the agenda that was passed out earlier.
None of them for this afternoon, however.
None of them for this afternoon. Good. None of them for this afternoon. All right, and are there any questions?
I'm curious about the $3 million for the abandoned mine land reclamation.
Sure.
What changed it that you went from 1.5 to 3?
The federal government, Congress, finally decided that the abandoned mine land program needed more money, and there was a bill passed. And
Interesting.
And remember, we talked about this for years. We talked about this for years, needing those dollars and those. There were different bills that were before Congress, but this one finally did pass. And so Jim provided us with reassurance just this a few weeks ago, saying that everything looks like it is in order and these monies are available to the states.
I think it also a pat on the back to the federal officials, administration officials. The Office of Surface Mining, I think, is the one who administers this, for getting behind that as well.
They worked for years.
You know, one of the things I think that's happening, too, is in some states the process is coming to an end where they actually are or have completed the reclamation of the abandoned mines. And then you have an even more interesting dilemma, getting back to Commissioner Wiefeld's or Commissioner Clark's statements earlier about the rollout of the funds versus the income, because what happens is there's theoretically, anyway, and I guess literally, a trust that gets built up with those funds. Even though they collect more than they appropriate, at some point there's a large balance. And then what to do with that large balance becomes a point of some debate as well in Congress.
Yeah. North Dakota's been along for the ride on this. Yeah. It's been a political ride. It's been a fight between members of Congress from eastern mining states and from western mining states, because what's happened is nationwide, the truly severest problems with abandoned mines tend to be in the older coal mining regions of the country, I mean, Appalachia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, where mining has gone on for many, many years and sometimes had some, let's just say, environmentally insensitive ways in previous years of mining. But production has tailed off in recent years from those areas. At the same time, Western mining states have just boomed in the Wyoming is probably the poster child for this, but it's a more recent phenomenon. Well, the tax they're paying in then is supposed to be designated for Wyoming, but there aren't a lot of abandoned mines under old practices to clean up in Wyoming. There are in the eastern part of the country, and so it's been a fight between these legislators from various parts of the country to determine how this gets allocated. I mean, Wyoming has reclaimed all of its abandoned mines to the degree that they ever had any, and so you know they've got a trust fund that's building up and is only getting larger, and money is going to school buses and education and things that folks in the eastern part of the country are saying, wait, if this is for mine reclamation, it should go to clean up mines. And we've just kind of been one of these states that's caught in the middle, and we're just trying to get back at least as much as we put in, and now it looks like we're starting to recover that.
It's kind of like Social Security when you describe it that way. We're all paying a bunch more in, so anyway.
Any idea how many abandoned mines might be out there yet?
Jim can show you the list. In North Dakota, we have a detailed list of projects that still need to be completed in our state, and he can show you that list.
We recently had, one of our mining companies recently received an award for mining a previously abandoned mine, as I recall. Was that Falkirk? Yeah, Falkirk. They mined through it, which is a wonderful way to help reclaim it. Obviously, not every abandoned mine has the level of productivity that one did. But, there's quite an inventory.
And we just, our staff prioritizes them from greatest public hazard to least public hazard. And then we work down the list as money becomes available.
Until there's a sinkhole that's discovered someplace, and then we deal with that one. If there's an emergency situation, that happens too, mm-hmm. pretty regularly.
Mm-hmm. the high walls that you're talking about, are these underground walls or are these above ground walls?
No, these were from open pit mining.
Okay.
All right. And then you have what happened was when they got to the final stretch of mining, though, they left a 70 to 80 foot high wall. And then they left the pit has collected water underneath it. And you can see when we do, this area up here was just left in a terrible situation is all I can tell you. All right. And so you can see that instead of, this is all spoil piles that are lined up here, all right? And so instead of pushing those like we would do in normal reclamation today, pushing those spoil piles toward the high wall and being able to then, and then putting topsoil and subsoil on top of those so that you'd have final reclamation, they just left it open. They left that final pit open, and they didn't know, not do any reclamation work, and so it's gathered water down there, and you've got a 70 to 80 foot high wall, so it's a very dangerous situation.
What, Jim, what years was that Columbus mine? It was all pre-mine law, of course.
Yes.
Yeah, that was all, I think, it goes back 40s, 50s, probably into the early 60s. The first reclamation law wasn't passed until 1969. So.
Okay.
On the Enbridge pipeline, I guess I'll phrase it this way. Did you find the company very cooperative in order to, you know, reach agreement where you can avoid these forested areas and do a better job of crossing rivers? How did you find the company
I've always found Enbridge to be a very good corporate citizen with regard to the siting laws and avoidance and areas, exclusionary areas. The Pembina crossing, for example, as Commissioner Weefold pointed out, was never contemplated to be anything other than it was because of its designation in the NRRI. With regard to the Tongue River, they worked very well with us and, didn't resist any of our suggestions and certainly not the order. And we were pleased that, you know, that they even came back with an option, and so we were able to put in the order two possibilities, depending on, again, the results of the archaeological study on option number one.
I also appreciate the way that they worked with the North Valley Water District. That particular issue didn't arise out of any intervention, so it wasn't a party that had a specific legal standing in the case, but it was just a water utility in that part of the state who had concerns, maybe not so much environmental concerns, it's just simply concerns that their pipe was weaving its way in and out and over and under the Enbridge pipe at a number of different crossings. And their concern was, they said, look, we just want to be out of the way of this thing so that there's kind of a consistent way of dealing with how we cross the Enbridge pipeline. And I was pleased to see that without kind of any legal wrangling or anything like that, apparently they were able to strike a deal with Enbridge. So certainly appreciate both the water users for bringing the issue to our attention, but also Enbridge for working with them.
And I think the two companies, the North Valley Water District and Enbridge, were already in consultation one with the other. Bringing the issue, however, to the commission's attention at a hearing did highlight it a little bit, I think, and helped secure a good resolution in the end. Tony makes an important point about the weaving in and out because, of course, again, this being the sixth and seventh pipeline in the same corridor, of course, there are different generations of methods and of course, things, different depths, different things that happen. I mean, you might have, five oil pipelines and then all of a sudden, a couple of water pipelines and then all of a sudden you're going to have another oil pipeline. And so you do have different depths. And one of the things we learned is that some of those original or earlier Enbridge pipelines aren't buried as deep as, we currently require. So, in fact, federal law only requires, I think it's 30 inches or 36 inches, something like that. We traditionally required 48 inches. So there's some variation through the generations.
Anything else? Okay.
Oh, did you see a tornado?
No, I didn't. This was a couple of years ago. But I was out, we're out on Devil's Lake, and It was just sort of a cloudy day. It wasn't a sort of day that you'd think, and it was kind of cool, not sort of a typical, hot, muggy, watch the thunderhead build and roll in. But I think it dropped from about, 60 degrees to about, 50 degrees over the course of 10 seconds. And then the wind came up, and it was just kind of one of these fronts. And then we, got rained on and spun around at the landing for 20 minutes. Everybody else tried to get off the lake, And then when we got to the car, finally, we turned on the radio and found out there was a tornado warning out for that area.
You know, it might be interesting to just note, since we're on the topic of Enbridge today, that we did receive a letter of intent about 10 days ago or so, of their intention to increase the capacity of the North Dakota main line by another 52,000 barrels per day through some pumps and other types of infrastructure, not pipe, but pumps, barrels, gathering stations. So they continue to increase capacity and meet the challenge of increased supply in Western North Dakota. So we appreciate that.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Happy New Year.